mostly. Some bruises, burns, bloody noses, and one or two hits on the sphere, too. And then it was Dale's turn. He moved well, and at first I thought he was seeking the Force, and I felt proud, pleased for him. But then the sphere took him down easily, and he pulled his blaster. He got off several shots before Master Kinnaid stopped him.
"She flung me to the ground and almost broke my arm," Dale says. "I almost went over the parapet."
Lawmead does not even look at Dale. He is still staring at Lannery, his old eyes almost closed as he listens and thinks.
"And your thoughts when one of those blaster shots passed close to your arm?"
"I was frightened for Dale," Lannery says.
"Because of what Master Kinnaid might do to him?"
"No, because of his own loss of control."
"And now your version of events, Dalian Brock."
Dale sighs deeply, an almost petulant breath. But Lannery can sense his fear. "Go on, Dale," she says. He glances sharply at her, then his gaze shifts to her bandaged arm and hand, and he looks wretched.
"I tried," he says. "I tried to find the Force."
"He's lying," Lannery thinks. "I know him so well, I can hear it in his voice."
"I tried my best, and when the sphere hit me, I went for my blaster, tried to follow the Force, shoot where it told me."
He shrugs.
"It didn't work. I'm sorry, Lannery."
"Every scar tells a story," she says, repeating something their father once told them. Temple Master Lawmi nods.
"It's fortunate that no one was killed. Master Kinnaid is adept at healing, and I consider myself lucky that she chose Stav Kesh instead of Maharakesh. She can mend flesh wounds and knit bones, given time. But no Jedi can defeat death. Your actions were foolish, Dalian. Led by impetuousness, not guided by the Force. I put that down to youth's enthusiasm. Perhaps some more traditional weapons training might be in order for the next few days, Master Kinnaid."
"Just what I had in mind," Kinnaid says.
She stands as if at a silent signal and motions Lannery and Dale to stand too.
"Stay with me, Lannery," Lawmi says.
The other two leave, and then Lannery is alone with the Temple Master. He is old and strong, but not intimidating. There's a kindliness to him that makes her feel comfortable, and she can sense his concern.
"Your brother," he says,
and then he says no more. A question? "He's trying," Lannery says. "He knows what our great journey is for, and he's doing his best."
"No,"
Lawmi says.
"I fear he has already given up. For some, the Force is never comfortable or easy to find balance within."
"No," she says, standing before the Temple Master. He remains seated and composed. "Our parents are Jedi, and we will be also."
"You already are, Lannery. I sense a great future for you. You're strong, sensible, mature, and you have..."
He held out his hand, tilted it left and right.
"Balance, give or take. But your brother is different. He carries a darkness within him, and his shunning of the Force makes it too dark to penetrate, too deep for me to plumb. There may still be a way back for him, but you have to realize how dangerous he might be. You have to be careful."
"I made a promise to my parents. He's my brother, I love him, and I'll save him."
"Sometimes, love is not enough."
Lawmi rises and takes her hand. He speaks no more. But she feels a touch on her mind, brief but potent, that shows her a blink of what Dale had been thinking in the Temple Master's chambers. Deep, dark thoughts. Chapter 9. Scars.
"The Jedi say there is no ignorance, there is knowledge. But they are ignorant of your lies, your struggles, and their superiority blinds them. They say there is no fear, there is power. Yet in their power, they are smug. And I will make them fear me."
Despot Queen Hadia, 10,658 TYA, so your arrival. Even from a distance, Nox looked like hell. Lannery plotted a route that brought them into the planet's atmosphere well on the opposite hemisphere from Greenwood Station, swinging them in an arc around the planet and approaching from the night side. The seas were a heavy, sullen gray, the land masses mostly covered by sickly-looking yellowish clouds that glowed and pulsed with interior storms. The small patches of land she could see between the clouds were of a uniform bronze color. There was no green. She wondered what Greenwood Station had been like when it had been named, or whether the name was bitterly ironic. Tree sat in the co-pilot's seat again. He hadn't said much for quite a while, and Lannery was starting to fear that he was succumbing to space sickness. If that happened, he'd be no use at all, and she'd have to leave him in the Peacemaker. And she would not leave him here with her ship, alone and awake. She knew exactly where to hit him. "Pretty," he said as they started skimming the atmosphere. "Not very. It's going to get bumpy." She'd taken them in a steeper descent than was normal, eager to enter the atmosphere as quickly as possible. The longer their approach, the more likely they'd be noticed. She could see at least 7 other craft on the scanners, all describing different descents to various parts of the planet, and she'd heard no hailing on the comm. But that didn't mean they weren't all being tracked. And maybe those other 7 were expected. Heat built around the Peacemaker's nose, shimmering their view and then hazing it out completely. The window's shields closed automatically, and Lannery kept her eyes on the scanners to maintain manual control. "Really," she said. "It'll be bumpy."
"Trying to get rid of me?" Tree asked. "Don't worry. I think I'll stay here, strapped in."
Even after 6 days, she still didn't like him sitting in the cockpit beside her, because she couldn't talk to herself anymore. The Peacemaker started to vibrate as it carved its way down into the planet's toxic atmosphere. Lannery swung the ship to the left and down, increasing the speed and angle of descent, and every now and then she glanced sidelong at Tree to see how he was taking this. Spaceflight was simple compared to the traumas of entering an atmosphere.